Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we are continuing our coverage of the Tanith First and Only, with the Tanith First and Only not making a bunch of friends. Mostly because they keep bumping into assholes who they then piss off and start blood feuds with. But
I do love that this gets really, really angry real fast. You're like, we actually saved your guys' lives. What? Why are you so mad at us? But
yeah, but you made us look bad doing it. So yeah. Anyway. 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow and comment because it helps the algorithm and pushes us out to more listeners. So yay on that. Also, the comments are fun. That's the other piece too. Comments are fun. We read them and they're enjoyable. Thank you.
That's just what
I said. Especially when people comment like super old cast where it's like, oh yeah, I did say that 2 years ago and I was wrong. Anyway,
you have to use the Brad line for it. I'll be wrong and I'll be wrong again.
It's just every now and then someone comes in and says, you know, it's pronounced this way. And I go, yeah, that's going to be the rest of my life. I'll be hearing
that. Hey, I'd like to say I got defended in Discord about the fact that The Lion King is another remake of Hamlet.
Yeah, no. Links in the show notes. You have links to our YouTube channel for a Q&A that we probably should do at some point this month. If you like this show, also a link to our other show, The History of 40K, where we talk about the history of the game of Warhammer on the tabletop. Recently been talking about chaos. Heyo. Anything the sound of my voice, check me out on Retro Recall, where I talk about old video games and discover whether they still are fun or still hold up. Spoiler alert, the N64 controller sucks. But if you want to support us and help us out, you can go to our merchandise, go to our website. We have things like dice. We have
stickers.
There we go. We have stickers. Brad's very proud of us having stickers after them being there for a year. And of course, you are our Patreon. Patreons in general are fantastic. Great way to support people. It is one way that you can help artists out, allow them to do their art. And it's a choice. For us, if you want to give us $4.99 a month, you can get this show and The History of 40K ad-free, or 165.82 Thai baht. Cannot believe I haven't done Thailand till now. Someone pointed it out to me and I was like, oh crap. So we're doing that right now. So sorry, by the way, not doing Thailand before this, but we're doing Surat Thani. This is the province in southern Thailand that holds basically the deepest and happiest place in my heart, because I really do love it. This is where Koh Samui is, Koh Tao, Koh Phang Nan, some of the most beautiful places I've been to in my life are over there. For those who don't know, Thailand's awesome. Just full stop. That's really it. I kickboxed did Muay Thai for close to 10 years, and I was fortunate enough to do it at Fairtex in the US, which allowed me to go over to Thailand quite a bit and visit. I'm also an avid scuba diver, so this is kind of a nice 1-2. This is effectively my Mecca. I wake up in the morning, I go to the dock, I scuba dive, the 2 or 3 dives, then I get back, I grab lunch, I go to the gym, I kickbox, I get dinner, I get some beer, and I repeat. And it's kind of like heaven. Thailand's freaking incredible. But Surat Thani, though, is in the southern part. I think it's the most beautiful part. Chiao Lan Lake is right there. That's the one people you've seen where it's the mountains coming straight down into this beautiful, like crystally blue ocean. Koh Samui is an island you can get through where you basically get around by longboat while you're there, which is fun as hell. And then you have just Koh Tao. And Koh Tao for scuba divers is heaven. It's basically perfect. It's rich in sea life. Everything's near the surface and the water is warm enough that you can do a 3 mil. I can do a 3 mil shorty, or I actually think I dove a couple times just board shorts. And then the best part of Thailand is the people. Thais are some of the kindest and most welcoming people I've ever met in my life. Even it actually kept me kickboxing. My body did not want to keep kickboxing, but it was the Thais who were actually teaching that kept me going back, and just I wanted to spend time with them that kept me in it. I know a lot of people will tell you that's the same story. It's the sport will take a lot out of you, but man, It's just a wonderful culture. And when you go over there, it's just so welcoming. So if you haven't been to Thailand, go. And if you have been, go again. And if you went there and had a bad time, it's because you're an So anyway.
Well put, sir. Well,
just calling it out. Discord. Jump into our Discord. Link in the show notes. Discord's been very fun. It always is very fun. Painting competitions, lore questions, advice, people discussing, you know, how to play the game of 11th. I'm still learning it, which is good because I have to play a bunch in the next 30 days.
Also, everyone's still learning it.
It is not going well. Anyway, but also some really fun stuff. We've got fan theories. We've got literature recommendations, gaming. It's actually, if you do play Space Marine 2, it's a great place to find people to play with. We have a whole channel dedicated to that, which is cool as hell. People talking about movies, people talking about really everything. So jump on in.
Talking about the upcoming Total War, which looks insane.
Yeah, let's not get too excited. I've learned my lesson over the years. I wait.
You will not take my excitement away from me, John. I'm just excited about it.
And I'm just not even looking at it and going, like, when it comes out, we'll find out. That's my viewpoint. Real quick, though, big thank to our whole moderator team within the Discord. They have done a really wonderful job with this community. I know it is very hard to moderate. Anyway, all right, back to it. The Sub-Out World Crusades. So they were looking up, and then things kind of were a bit different. So, well, Warmaster Slato.
We end up with some conspiracies here very soon, and some old technology. And all.
Yeah, we're going to have some issues. So the Crusade actually is off to a pretty good start. You've got Slato is dead, unfortunately. The original Warmaster is dead, but it is still going well. Nadzi Bear is dead. I'm going to keep calling him that forever. The forces of chaos are running away in the region for the most part, short term.
There is a shit ton of them, though.
So yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, this was not a small incursion. Chaos owns this part of town, and it's not a nice part of town. It's like Toledo. But the the new warlord is, at least on the outset, the guy for the job. And now Makaroth has been an interesting war master. He is kind of all or nothing in campaigns. And one of the things that makes him so successful is he's very firm in his commitment to his plans. This is something that undermines a lot of Imperial Guard commanders. When you read through the lore, read through the history, a lot of them tend to grasp defeat from the jaws of victory because they become tepid at a certain point in their plans. And they just take too long. So the plans take out too long to develop. They're understaffed. This is what we saw
They stop getting support. Yeah. We talked a lot about this. In the fact Rex. That where the Imperium thinks is important is often real waxing and waning on stuff, especially if you started getting some victories. They'll take away a lot of your forces so that it can be used somewhere else.
Yeah, because they just assume, you're good to go. Yeah. Exactly. Makaroth, what he does is he just goes all in on everything. And I use the term all in because he's also a degenerate gambler. He's known for this, like a horribly degenerate gambler. And what's interesting is that this gambling style actually works for him quite a bit. He just gambles that the enemy will just break if he throws all these forces at it. And he commits even more forces to the gap. So there can't even be a counterattack because there's just too many dudes there to even counterattack into.
It does crack me up that the guy that hasn't looked at his whole card is just all in, doubling down on his bet for just getting that inside straight in the river.
Yeah. He's like, this will work out. And oftentimes his gambles do pay off because he's playing against chaos. And chaos will usually fold under overwhelming force because chaos, they like to lay traps. They're not meant to do a big frontal assault. Unfortunately for Makaroth, and this will come up later, when it doesn't work out, it is catastrophic losses. Catastrophic losses because chaos is ready for him. Now, the challenges that are about to face the Sabbat Crusade, though, are actually not chaos-oriented. They're more guard-oriented.
And it's the fact that a lot of squabbling from day one, also, by the way.
But forget day one from like 30, from like what, when did the emperor go into the throne?
Yeah, 30. True.
Yeah, it's like, it's for at this point, 30, 10,000
years. This is more closer to 12, but yeah,
So there's some issues here. And so the challenge, obviously, is the personalities. We've got, and we talked about this a little bit last time, but it's going to come up a lot more today. So I want to make sure we strive on this again. The Guard is made up of an almost infinite number of individuals and regiments, and they all come in two forms, those striving for glory and those trying to hold on to their glory. That's it. And
I'm 100% pointing out the fact that he has to make big things. In the notes, we talk about the fact that he's gambling on, was the commander that was sent in a genius, or did he just get lucky and he's actually a moron? The best part about moron is it's misspelled in the notes. And there's something about the irony of that that makes me so happy. I read that last
I type fast.
Early in the morning.
You read it at a point when the rest of the world was asleep.
Yeah, that's true.
Brett, what I like is that you work a graveyard shift, but you also work a day shift because you just don't sleep. It's healthy.
No way. The doctor keeps telling me sleep less, drink more.
It's going great. Yeah. So the problem really for Makarov is that some of these commanders just got lucky and he's going to put them in charge of something. And this guy might just be an idiot and he's going to get everyone killed. Or maybe he's a chaos corrupted traitor. Spoiler alert. There's a big foreshadow there. Side note, everybody. I'm trying to do these notes in a way that those of us who've read the Gaunt's Ghost books can enjoy them. But those of us who haven't read them can still read them later. And
don't worry, I've already leaned into the fact that I'm going to spoil the shit out of stuff.
Yeah, I will.
Super excited about
this. Yeah, later in the cast, we are going to spoil one of the episodes pretty badly. I will give you guys a big spoiler alert of when that's coming. So just heads up on that one.
That's now.
No, it's not bad. This one, so
as soon as I start ranting, I'm going to talk about things. So just
and those edit you out anyway. Problem one of us has control. So one of the best parts about the Gaunt's Ghost books, and one of the reasons I know I love them, a lot of people do love them, is this next bit: is the fact that they really do cover this infighting, kind of the truth of the war and the way the Imperial Guard interacts. Because a lot of the other
war, though, that's the whole point, though.
Well, life in the war. Yeah, it's the life of the soldiery. Is what I mean.
Exactly.
The war.
I am not a big Imperial Guard fan, but I love these books because.
Oh, you love a good Bane Blade. Don't shut up.
Yeah. But I love the fact that they get into what's happening in these guys. The lives of everything, what's happening with these guys. They keep making it out of death's door. They come out, but it's not just about the wins and losses. It's how everything's going about it. The actual battles are kind of the boring part, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
It's everything else that's going on that's more
exactly. Because a lot of the Black Library books, it's just a novel about a campaign. You have a protagonist, you have an antagonist. The antagonist almost wins, but then the protagonist, grasps the victory. And this happens in Gaunt's Ghost. I mean, there are a couple of Gaunt's Ghost novels where there are some fights that are kind of like, yeah, no, they should have lost that. Cough, cough, fighting demons. Cough, cough. But it's the backdrop. It is, to Brad's point,
strong.
Yeah, but you've got this. These books are amazing because you have this massive crusade going on. And within this crusade, there's all these small wars that make up the campaign. And the wars are not just with the enemy, but with each other. Wars of honor, wars of pride. These make sense. You take billions of people, shove them into a war where survival is a fraction of a fraction of a percentage. You are not going to survive this. They're all just killing machines, and they start kind of getting a little bit uppity with each other. And you have some vendettas, and you have some blood feuds, and you have some blood oaths. And that's what makes these books so great. So for people to know why people like these books, who, if you haven't read them, this is why. Because the setting is better than most of the other books, with the exception of maybe the Horus Heresies.
It is funny on this. I like these books quite a lot. And you make a disclaimer of, us grabbing all this information together. I will also goof them up because I, as usual, try to go from my really lockstrob memory and rock it out.
Yeah. And so the last little disclaimer before we begin this bit here is, I did what I could to do this in chronological order. So there are a lot of books who make up the Gaunt's Ghost series, and they are not actually written in a chronological order. Oh. They jump within the books. So I went to Reddit, I went to Lexicon, I went to other websites to try and do this in chronological order. So we're not going to cover them actually in book order. We're going to cover them in actual year-by-year chronological order. I may get some of it wrong. I tried. That's all I'm going to say. So if I get some of this wrong and people are like, hey, you missed this, I tried. So
also
with that,
I want to do a recommendation on this though, because I love the Gaunt's Ghost books are very good, but I like, if you go into some of the anthologies that they wrote around this, I love anthology pieces. They have the anthology short story pieces that are on this. I would recommend this. I'm just giving my,
I will say the Gaunt's Ghost books get a little long in the tooth by the end. Because
there are 15 ends.
That's why. At a certain point, you're like, but the early ones are exceptional.
The early ones are very, very good. That's why I said also do the early ones and then do the anthology pieces.
I would agree. I agree completely. So let's get into this. So after the events on Black Shard, the Tanith were sent to the world of Voltamond. And this is a world in Chaos Rebellion. Again, cultists, not space marines and demons. The Tanith are sent there to support a siege that's already underway. And there's a commander there named Stern. And Stern has been trying to breach the capital of Voltis City for a while. And he's been repelled. And he's now fallen very far behind schedule.
The bigger part is he's not on schedule. He's supposed to have
very far behind schedule. And Makaroth is sending these Tanith there, not as a support and more as a, here, hurry up. You need to get going. Now, Commander Stern's important because he is in charge of what's called the Royal Volpine. It's Volpine. It's pronounced Volpine. I haven't read this in a long time. I think it's a Volpine regiment. The Volpine are known as the Blue Bloods. They're kind of like the Cadians. This is a planet that's been producing regiments for millennia.
I was saying,
and they're very good. They make exceptional soldiers. They are famous soldiers. They are known for being good tacticians, very loyal, all this stuff. To be a commander of them is important.
Well, also, one of the biggest things about him not have taken this so far is the initial, what he was assigned was considered basically overkill. He has the artillery units. He has huge amounts of forces. He's supposed to be done, not because they were expecting too much, but they thought they gave him too many forces to do what they
were. Well, he's the commander of the Volpine. He should be able to figure this out. He also had, to Brad's point, the Ketsok 17th. The Ketsok are a regiment, it's a plant that basically specializes in mobile artillery. So he's got basilisks. He's got everything he needs. Stern takes a look at the Tanith and just saw the word expendable written across their foreheads and goes, cool, I need a breach. Go get me a breach. And because the Tanith are for stealth, just go do this thing. And Gaunt was not oblivious to the fact that Stern was not showing him a ton of respect, but it's commanding officer, so, you know, deal with it. The ghosts go off to do what they do best. They start scouting and moving ahead, looking for stuff. And as they do this, a very important event occurs. The Ketsok 17th, the mobile artillery, were moving to reposition. And as they were moving, they moved right into a chaos ambush.
I mean, right. They were standing on the X. There was a piano on a rope right over top of them. It wasn't great.
Yeah, and basilisks, for those of you who haven't seen the basilisk, they're not great at taking fire because of the whole backside of it having no armor on it and being a dude standing on like a platform.
Loading artillery shells into it. Yes.
Not ideal. But the problem is the chaos ambush was also inside of a Tanith ambush. So the X had a bigger X. And so
I wish there was even one more. I want to do Russian dolls.
He's like, yeah. So what happens is a Tanith jump. Effectively, the Ketsok just hear gunfire and the Tanith have just killed all the chaos. And just pop out and go, hey, you guys should be more careful. There's like a bunch of like bad guys up here. Watch it. And the Ketsok commander who's there remembers this as, oh, that was pretty cool of you. Thank you. Anyway, the Tanith head off into the city and they decide a two-pronged attack on the city. One of them is like the main gate. the idea was we'll hit the main gate and that'll pull the defenders away from the main gate. And then
the defenders did not listen to Robert Downey because
this whole story is hilarious. Cause they go for the main gate. We're going to basically distract the main gate with an attack on the main gate. But then we're going to sneak over this other spot over here. That's kind of like almost like a corner and we're going to blow this off. And that way, while all the defenders are defending the main gate, we'll make this breach over here. But the problem is the defenders here were like Vicini. So he knows that I know that he knows.
I don't need to defend the main gate.
Yeah, because you would know that I would know that it's like a land war in Asia. Okay. So what ends up happening is the ones attacking basically the side, they run into incredible defenses. But the main gate's basically unprotected.
And they blow it up and just walk through.
Blow the main gate, and walk through, taking the city. And so Stern looks like an idiot because the Tanith, who are a scouting regiment, just opened the main gate and are seizing the capital. So Stern immediately orders the Tanith to pull back so his Vulpine can take the city, which, to be fair, is the right call. The Tanith are wearing camo cloaks and the Vulpine are fully armored. There are still chaos forces in there. But as the Tanith come back, they start getting artillery fire. And the artillery fire is...
They're saying the most casualties they've taken since the first time they showed up.
Yeah.
And they realize it's friendly fire.
Yeah.
Basically, Gaunt is not super excited about this and rolls up on the Ketzok 17th and proceeds to drop an RKO out of nowhere on him and just obliterate this guy.
He knocks the commander out and then walks away because the commander just fired on his troops. He then arrives back in the command, center tent. It's bigger than a tent, less than a fortress. And Stern is there. And as Gaunt gets in there, he realizes that the Ketzok fired on him because Stern told him to. Because Gaunt complains to Stern. And Stern says, well, in war, you get confused. Who's an enemy? Who's not an enemy? So we were just, artillery has to cover a return. But then Gaunt realizes what Stern's real goal was. Stern knew that once the reports of all of this had happened, it would show that he was a failure. Because the actions of Gaunt and the Tanith broke the siege. No matter what, that was going to get reported back. And the glory of the day, even though the Vulpine technically took the city, the glory of the day was going to go to the Tanith.
He had to
get rid of that.
Because he's going
to court-martial. Awesome.
He said Stern wants to court-martial him because he hit another officer. That way, it's the report's going to have him being dishonored. Mm-hmm. And during this, a basilisk crashes through the gates.
Yeah.
The commander of the
rolls
17th
up. Yes. Yeah.
Jumps off and tells in front of everybody, Lord Stern, I need to show you that there's been a miscommunication. I actually tripped and fell off the tank. It definitely wasn't Dawn hitting me. Mm-hmm. None of that happened. And he tells it to in front of everybody in the main command.
Yeah. Also, while the barrel of his basilisk is pointing at the main command center, there's two pieces to this story. And so Gaunt Stern looks at Gaunt and goes, guess I didn't do it. And Gaunt is relieved. And the Tanith get a massive glow up out of this. Stern is obviously furious. He does not look good. This is a massive embarrassment for him. But this is one of many enemies that Gaunt has start kind of racking up quickly. So after this, they move to a world called Caligula because apparently they would name a world Caligula. Why? I don't know.
It's a park planet.
I mean, they're not even trying. Sometimes the naming mechanics are just complete phone it in. All right, it's a hive world because of course Caligula is a hive world and has gone to chaos because of course the Caligula hive world has gone to chaos. Thanks guys, that was all implied in the name. Move on with your day. All right, Makarov went hard on this world and he went hard on it because he had to bring it back in line for his campaign. Remember, we've covered this before. Warp travel is faster than light travel, but it's not instant. or even really that fast.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, true. The issue is that the way I like to always describe it, when people, I talk to people about Warhammer Universe, it's kind of like moving in the galaxies, like the 16th century on the globe. You can move goods around, but it does take a while. So what you want to have, if you're a war master, is you want to establish supplies and manufacturing within your war zone. That way you can actually resupply and rearm. That's why the Tanith Regiment was raised from a world that was in the Sabbat worlds. Just makes more sense, right? Caligula is one such world, massive hive world, great for manufacturing. And the Tanith are one of the ones who were chosen for the assault on Caligula, which doesn't go great because, again, Caligula. Actually, it was catastrophically bad. So the initial landing is made, and that one's kind of okay. They get scattered because partway through a sucking storm erupts.
You made it sound like it was catastrophic bad, but it wasn't that bad. But yes, it was because
the second landing was worse. Yeah. Well, let's compare them. The first one, as they're landing, the psychic storm starts. So all the ships get scattered. The second part of the landing hits the psychic storm, so they're all just gone.
Well, let's also
and the third landing doesn't get to start.
I was saying, yeah. Talk about psychic storms and things in the warp. This is more like uncontrollable force lightning everywhere.
Yeah, we say a psychic storm, it's not a like, hey, it's a turbulent landing. It's a force field. It's basically a force field. If you try to go through, you die. That's the better way of thinking about it. So the Tanith are on the surface and immediately come under attack by chaos forces. So they pretty quickly have a realization that they can't hold out here. This is a hive world. There are billions of enemies here. So they need to go find the source of the psychic storm and stop that. Which, good news, they do. Bad news, it's a demon, which is pretty hardcore punching up for the Tanith. Like, cultists, fine. We did actually have one of them did kill a dreadnought, but it was a very injured dreadnought, and he kind of used the planet itself to kill the dreadnought. So, demon, no. Like, despite what we can do on the tabletop, there is, we're doing more 7th edition. There is no, sixes don't always hit or wound. You know, so demons are, no. And the ghosts are pretty separate. So Gaunt isn't even part of this process. So it's actually the second in command, Korbeck, is the one who finds it, even with a small collection of Gaunts. Korbeck does some pretty quick math in his head. He looks at his guns. He looks at the demon. Then he goes, that's not going to work. But then he remembers something. There are ships that are up above. And a psychic storm can stop a landing craft. But how about a macro cannon shell? Let's find out. So he uses a comm tower and radios the coordinates of the demon to a ship in orbit. And the Hive City loses a few city blocks. Yeah. But also a demon.
Yeah, it also lost a lot of peeps. They were super okay with some collateral damage that day.
Yeah, a section of the Hive disappeared, but so did the demon and the psychic storm, allowing the forces to actually land. And Caligula is conquered, air quotes here. Because the Imperial forces, while they're able to secure the planet, do run into a problem. Demon's gone, so forces of chaos are there. But the thing about chaos forces is, they're not really going to surrender, right? You're not going to say, oh, hello, Mr. Inquisitor. My name's Gerald, and I was a chaos cultist. Sorry about that. You know, it's not
I'm ready to convert back. You're like,
yeah, exactly. No, I've seen the pendant engines. I know what happens. So the issue is that you have to go find every cultist and kill all of them. And they know that too. So it's not very long before you start having terrorism. And the main spot of terrorism that starts happening is they have to start moving convoys all around the hives to move food, move people, move this stuff. And they start, when I say getting blown up, it's like one or two convoys. Entire convoys are getting wiped out.
Yeah, they were also dropping
bad
and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad. So super jacked up. Now, what do they do about it? Gaunt is told, hey, solve this. You guys are sneaky. Go do this. And they pretty quickly realize this is an inside job. They use Bragg because everyone thinks Bragg's stupid. So that's why they use Bragg. So they use Bragg to go in there. And we'll talk about these guys in a second, everybody. They use Bragg to go in there. And one of the pilots just assumes Bragg's an idiot and starts radioing the chaos guys. Like, oh, hey, here we come. And Bragg beats the crap out of that guy. And then they track down the cultists and bring in, I think it was Marauder bombers to just wipe out the chaos forces. So once again, saves the day. Actually, you know what? We should take a moment here. Let's take a quick aside and talk about the Tanith and Gaunt, because I do want to mention some of the main characters that make up Gaunt's ghosts, mostly because y'all are going to paint the models. And so I'll tell you who they all are real quick, because they're going to come up more through the stories.
We'll be right back after a quick break. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard me talk about BetterHelp for a long time, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. The reviews are updated every day with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. Please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. Keep in mind that more than 6 million people have used BetterHelp globally, and the consistent feedback from real users makes it easy to see why so many people continue to use BetterHelp. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience, and they all hold the required education, training, and certificates across a range of mental health specialties. See all the reviews and what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. August is the perfect time to hit reset before the autumn rush begins. And honestly, I can't think of a better place to start than my closet. That's why I love shopping at Quince. Quince specializes in everyday staples that work harder, like their ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're versatile, timeless, and transition seamlessly from a casual workday to a dinner out. If you're still hanging on to the same worn-out basics, Quince makes it easy to upgrade. They have premium denim, tailored chinos from just $60 with the kind of perfect fit, structure, and high-quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. But everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories to cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. I can say from experience that I'm a huge fan of their comfort stretch traveler pants. I got one and then immediately ordered a second to help replace my stuffy suits I was wearing to work events. They're comfortable, they're stretchy, and I still look professional. And they've been a very welcome addition to my wardrobe, allowing me to be much more comfortable while actually looking better and more relaxed on work trips. And it's not just clothing. Quince also has hotel quality bedding and bath essentials from premium cookware and travel must-haves. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/40klore. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/40klore.
So, as we said before, Gaunt is not from the planet, so that the Tanith, but all the rest of them are from Tanith. And, you know,
first just, and only.
Yeah, the first and only. So, the first thing Gaunt does once he gets control is he promotes two of the Tanith to commanders, and it's Korbeck and Ron. And he does this actually, interestingly, because they're the first two who confront him.
About abandoning Tanith.
Yeah. And so he respects them quite a bit for being, he realizes, okay, the rest of this regiment seems to look to the two of you. So you're also in charge now. Congratulations. And so let's talk about Korbeck first. Korbeck was a member of the Tanith militia. He was very charismatic, and his narrative role is bastard son coming into his own. He was born out of wedlock to a simple laborer. He's kind of got meant that get it that he's, if you guys Game of Thrones, he's Jon Snow. I don't know which book came first, so I don't know where the IP violation here is. He's brave without bravado. He does things, and when he does, and when he does these really brave things, he thinks nothing of them because he's just like,
he's always trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, but when he does it, he doesn't think of it as I'm an example setter. He just goes, yeah, of course I did that. That's what needed to get done. Now, from the onset, Korbeck and Gaunt get along pretty well. Korbeck sees in Gaunt a leader who also just wants to do the right thing in a galaxy of wrong. And they actually bond.
Yeah. Yes, I was going to say, not the same thing happened with Ron.
Ron's the inverse. So Ron, who also gets promoted by Gaunt, hates Gaunt. Hates him.
He also told him he hated him when he promoted him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was pretty fun. I mean, he does kind of the life of Brian. Well, how much do you hate the Romans? A lot. That's his viewpoint of Gaunt. And in fact, the first mission they were ever on together, we talked about last cast, he tried to kill Gaunt because when he set all the explosives, he punched Gaunt and tried to knock him unconscious, but grossly underestimated how well Gaunt could take a punch. And Gaunt did not underestimate how well Ron could take a punch. And Gaunt actually knocked him then unconscious and carried him out.
Yes.
Yeah. Which Gaunt, by the way, neither told anybody about nor punished Ron for. He let him keep his rank and everything. So interesting little fact about Gaunt. He seems to respect Ron's attempt at murder. So whatever.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff with Ron that they kind of.
Ron is very, very useful. Ron
He's also sketchy as shit.
Yeah. So the rumors around Ron are that he comes from a wealthy family, but he's like third. It's like the third son. So he has no chance within the family. And he may or may not have killed somebody. The Arbides. The Arbides are definitely were, because all the Arbides on Tanith are also dead, were aware of Ron. Whether it was they were hunting him down for a murder or just criminal, we don't know.
Well, but throughout the books, Ron continually is the guy that can get them stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the stuff is. He kind of always has, I know a guy that knows a guy that can get some things. And that's outside of Tanith. That continues on in the novels. He's
a master of working with the underground, air quotes there. And what happens is, and Ron is always meant to be this mix of benefit and challenges. So this working with the underground will sometimes be a good thing. It's actually always a good thing because it times out really well. It'll sometimes cause a mild, irritant for them, but for the most part, but then when he really needs something, he'll come through. That's kind of Ron. Then you have M'Call. Yeah, it's the problem is you put the letter M and the letter K with no vowel in between. I'm going M'Call. M'Call is just, he's the stealthy guy. He's the stealthiest of the stealthiest.
I was just about to
That's
say.
That's what he is.
You say he's the stealthy guy. Is like
he's the Korax of that's a thing. M'Call disappears is what he can do. So of anybody, he
sneaks up on other Tanith guys all the time.
He sneaks up on assassins. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. He disappears. M'Call has, and we can. I might as well mention here the Tanith do seem to have some supernatural levels of powers. M'Call is one of the ones where it's like it's pushing it to the point where I will use the term Korax. He does seem to be able to disappear from sight and stay obscured at a level that's gone. Too far. Yeah. Gaunt's a big fan of M'Call, by the way. He also shows up.
A lot of times they just yell his name out and he's like, yeah, what's going on? I've been here the whole time kind of thing.
Yeah. He's very enjoyable. Then we have Bragg. Bragg is a catachan. He's
hired goat.
He's a giant guy. He's kind of fun because he's the only one who can actually hold and fire a heavy bolter. But they do that
he also never hits anything.
Well, they give him the heavy bolter because he has no aim. And the idea is just here's the spray and pray weapon because if we give you the las gun, you're going to hit anything. But if you give me this thing, you might hit something. But Bragg is meant to be a mix of comedic and heroic. He's Fezzik, if you get from Princess Bride. That's what he is. He's not as big as Andre the Giant, but he is Fezzik. He's not dumb. He's just simple. And he's really happy with just, he wants to be around his friends. That's all he wants. But he has physical power. Bragg is, there's in a lot of stories, Bragg will show up when there's a fight, and whoever they're fighting, if it's a hand-to-hand, goes, I'm done now. This is about to hurt really bad, so I'm going to go ahead and
because
leave.
Bragg is half a monster. Ogryn, basically.
Yeah, he is a monster of a man. But he's not stupid. He's just more calm. But my favorite of them all is Larkin. And that's because I think
psycho.
Well, it's because I think Larkin actually is the one who's most affected by whatever warp powers are affecting the ghosts. It's Larkin.
Because he goes, Larkin nuts. He's the crazy Irish guy from Braveheart. Just a nutball.
He's out of his mind. So he's the sniper. He's the oldest member of all of them. He was just a hunter on Tanith, and then he enlisted because he suffers from delusions, migraines, fits of rage. He's basically possessed by the good spirits of Tanith, and he can barely hold on to his own mental faculties half the time, but he's almost always a benefit to the ghosts. He can, but he just basically performs miracles, for lack of a better phrase, all the time with his rifle. Able to see, he sees through illusions, and we're going to talk about him quite a bit. There are others, but those are the guys you paint, so they are covered, and they're going to come up a little bit. And I talked about Larkin, so let's talk about Bucephalon. Bucephalon's annoying because it was listed as the most honorable of the Sabbat worlds, and I don't love GW writing sometimes. Bucephalon was ruled by 32 merchant families, all of which were supposedly supremely loyal to the Imperium, and they had a strict code of conduct and civic pride. And so Bucephalon was heralded as an example of what a planet should be, as opposed to, hive worlds in the Sabbat region, which basically were like, look, this pre and post chaos corruption were kind of the same, So at the onset of the Crusade, Slado had marked Bucephalon as a key world for liberation. And,
it's going to be beneficial for us to get it.
Yeah, it's really critical. The problem is that Bucephalon had been conquered by a chaos demagogue named Nokad the Blighted, Smiling.
I was going to say, in my mind, he was known as Nokia the Blighted, and he was one of the guys that tries to make their own nickname. I feel like that's him.
Yeah. Well, I like his Nokia the Smiling. And I'm always smug. He is always grinning because he's this giant man. He's 2 meters tall. And he had conquered Bucephalon, slaughtered all the nobles' families. Like, she had crucified them on their own banners outside of the city walls, and built this massive chaos fortress. So Makaroth gets there and is this incredibly fortified planet, but he has to take it because, like his predecessor, he also recognized the significance of the planet. The morale that would happen if he destroyed it to both his army, but also to the region, he just couldn't afford. So he had to do something, but he also didn't really want to get bogged down. So he does an invasion, and it goes kind of to plan. It's just a stalemate. There's too many forces there. So he goes to the Tanith, and he orders the Tanith, I want you to deploy down behind enemy lines.
Do Tanith stuff.
Yeah. Go find Nokad and kill him. So the Tanith do this. They deploy down, and as soon as they get down there, Larkin starts having issues.
Losing his mind. He's freaking out. He's hallucinating shit. He's having a bunch of visions over and over and over again on it. Mm-hmm. And
they're just dragging him along, basically. Yeah.
And the thing is that Nokad basically discovers the Tanith and starts to attack. And Larkin just freaks out. But he freaks out in a weird way, which is why I think that Gaunt just didn't shoot him.
Yeah, so because the Tanith do successfully get inside the city. But then Nokad finds them. And they begin attacking. And they are overwhelmed. They're on the wrong side of the wall. All of the rest of the forces are on the other side of the wall, and then they're just surrounded by chaos forces. And then Larkin just runs away. And Gaunt sees him run away, but doesn't shoot him, which probably, you know, which ends up being a good call. But Larkin runs into a cathedral for Sabbat.
Sabbat. And then yeah. I love that this statue comes alive and tells Larkin that there's a perfect perch on the top of the chapel that he could see and take care of Nokan from that perch. And so he does exactly that.
Yeah. He climbs the top of the cathedral, looks out, and there's Nokan preaching. Because remember, this is chaos. So he's empowering everybody through him. Nokan is, obviously, he's Khorne. He is a Khorne demagogue. And he is empowering his forces through him. He's just, you know, speaking the word of Khorne. And he takes rifle right through the head.
After he had no head, he did less preaching.
Yes. And immediately all the chaos, all the forces and power of Khorne flowing stopped. And the entirety of the battle turns. The Tanith first and only have turned the battle. Bucephalon falls for the Imperium. And this is basically a little moment of divine intervention. Once again, the renown of Tanith is growing. All right. Fortis Binary is a hive world in the Sabbat worlds. And it was marked for conquest as its resources were, air quotes, necessary for the continuation of the campaign. And for this, Warmaster Makaroth placed Lord General Militant Hector Dravir in charge of the campaign. Yes. Now, Dravir is a very important character because he's this highly ambitious man. He wanted to be the War Master before Slato became the War Master. And then when Slato died, he wanted to be the War Master before Makaroth died.
Actually, it's not one. He felt he deserved both of them. And when Slato was killed, he felt that obviously there's no chance.
It's coming to
me. His mind. Yeah.
And it went to Makaroth. And so Dravir becomes obsessed with getting this next appointment. And so he tries to achieve this kind of weirdly mutually exclusive goal. He wants to have for himself great military success while having Makaroth have great military failure, his boss. Not really ideal. Now, he also has in his inner circle, or he's in the inner circle of, an inquisitor by the name of Haldane. So at this moment, I have to get a little break. If you haven't read Tanith First and Only, and you want to read Tanith First and Only, stop listening to us now, because we are going to ruin the end of Tanith First and Only. Full stop.
Because this is the entirety of the biggest part of
Tanith. Yeah, this is the most exciting part of that entire book. We're not going to cover every bit of it. You can still read it, but I'm just letting you know, we're going to cover the big reveal. There it is. All right, you've been warned.
Haldane, by the way.
Yeah, Haldane the Inquisitor had done what a lot of Inquisitors done. He had fallen to chaos without realizing he'd fallen to chaos. This thirst for and pursuit of knowledge is all-encompassing for an Inquisitor, and there is only one force in the galaxy that can grant this level of knowledge, and it does it at a price. On the world of Fortis Binary, the Ghosts are deployed under the command of Dravir. But they weren't alone on the planet. There were also the Jantine patricians on the world, who were led by a man named Colonel Drakkar Flens, who is the son of Aldo Dressius, the guy Gaunt had killed for leaving his father to die. And in doing so, had ruined Flens' entire life.
Yeah,
he had ruined Flens' life. I mean, because he stripped Flens of all of his noble titles. Of note, Gaunt doesn't know this because Flens had changed his identity, because Flens' father's real name was Aldo Dersius, but Flens took on a new name and had elevated himself. So Gaunt has no idea who this guy is. The problem, though, is that the Jantine patricians are a very famous regiment, and Flens had been a very successful leader. He'd gotten very close to Hector Dravir. So now these two are pretty close. There is a massive chaos force on the planet of Fortis Binary, and Flens had this great idea about what to do about this force. Send the Tanith First and Only to charge their lines, and that'll get the chaos forces to come out, and then me Patricians and my
can
very well
win the day.
Exactly. And Dravir says that's a great idea. But Dravir knows you can't just send one regiment into the lines alone because it's too obvious that's just a suicide attack. The Tanith would know it's a suicide attack, but more importantly, the enemy would know it's a suicide attack and they wouldn't counterattack because they'd be like, yeah, we're not getting drawn to this dumbass. So they're joined by the Vitrian Dragoons, who, side note, why can't we have these models?
Oh, they look so cool.
Yeah. It's like, so the Vitrian Dragoons, like they, it would be a nightmare to paint. Well, maybe contrast would make it easier, but they wear, yeah, they wear dragon scale armor. They look awesome.
Glimmer.
Yeah. I think actually with the contrast, these could look, it could be an easy paint. Oh, they look way better. All right. But the Vitrians are this highly honor bound society, deeply loyal to the Imperium, very strong soldiers. You know, kind of like, you guys probably guess what's going to happen here. The initial assault in the Chaos Lines goes
as expected.
Terribly. The Chaos artillery the shit out of them. And they go and they scatter.
They disperse them, but Gaunt basically grabs all of his guys and starts saving the Dragoons, who are super excited about that.
Yeah, because the Tanith are able to use their camo cloaks to move around and they're able to find the Vitrians and save them. Say, hey, come with us.
Yeah. The biggest thing, they find this underground train line. And they're like, well,
really convenient.
Nobody knows about it. So it's basically wildly unguarded.
For the beginning.
For them, I'm saying.
I mean, I just want to point out, when we talk about, poor plot devices, it's a trench war campaign. And they find just like a random hatch that they open up and go, oh, look, if we go down this hatch, there's an old abandoned train line here that no one seems to know about. And we can just wander through it. And eventually they do come upon about 200 of the enemy cultists and a pair of Iron Warriors. So there's a fight at the end.
Hold on. Also, a massive monolith.
Yeah. And then they get there. The big piece of this is there's a giant monolith at the end of it. And the monolith is, there's a chaos, like kind of ritual being done around this monolith. And it's one of seven. Get it? Seven? All right. Now, the key thing about this is, the Tanith always have its little bits of divine intervention. 20 years prior to this, on the world of Darandara, there's a rogue psyker. And this is a rogue psyker that tells Gaunt about his father's betrayal, but also says the following to him. It says, there will be seven stones of power. Cut them and you will be free. Do not kill them. But first you must find your ghosts. And then finally, the warp knows you, Ibram. So he remembers this and realizes that blowing up the monolith, bad. I have to interrupt the ritual. So instead, he just turns the monolith. They grab it and they rotate it, which severs the ritual. It affects all of the other monoliths, which then effectively turns off the warp to all the cultists.
It's weird, though, because they go from this super juiced up. I don't know. It's like if you hit adrenaline that had the after adrenaline dump, because everybody becomes lethargic. It's haste. It's after haste. He cast haste and he interrupted.
Yeah.
Everybody's lethargic.
Yeah. And so they all just come straight down. And so the enemy just is kind of useless at this point. Then Gaunt does find something he can blow up. They find the giant ammo dump in the dead center of the complex, which is where the ammo dump should be, for the record. And they go, well, we're blowing this thing up. So they do. And they effectively blow the center out of the entire complex. So Gaunt and the Dragoons, on their suicide charge, effectively conquer this entire facility.
This annoys me so much as a Fleds gets super mad. All of the patricians become super angry.
You're furious. Yeah,
they
about
stole
this.
Your glory. You're like, screw you, dude. You sent us in to die. You're mad that we succeeded.
Well, it's
eat
not
a tornado
made
of them.
It's not made better by the fact that, Dravir, it also does kind of talk a little
he
bit of crap to Flens about this, about like, I thought you said these guys were idiots. I mean, these are backwood farmers, just did what you couldn't do. And they took almost no casualties. What's going on? So after the events of Fortis Binary, the Tanith, the Gentine Patricians, the Vitrians, and some other are sent to Menzanoid Epsilon. which is interesting. Menzenot Epsilon is a converted Chaos Shrine world. So goodbye. That has to go. Full destroy. The weird thing is that Dravir, who's the one who sends them there, doesn't want to blow it up from orbit, which is what you should do to a Chaos Shrine world. Instead, we're going to conquer it.
You're like, yeah, this has no strategic value. We could legitimately just make it so no one could leave from orbit. And we'll just blow it up.
You can blow it up later.
Any of these things.
It's not even on a warp route. It's not a hive world. It's just like, we'll get to it later. You can send the Imperial Navy on their way somewhere else. Hey, just blow that up when you get a free minute. Dravir is insistent that we're going to this world. And this is because, thanks to Inquisitor Haldane, he knows there's an artifact there that will allow him to usurp Makarov. The problem with a rogue Inquisitor like Haldane is that he's not technically rogue yet. Rogue Inquisitors are like bank robbers. He hasn't committed the crime yet till you rob the bank. Haldane's got the gun. He's in the bank, but he's still in line waiting to talk to the teller. That's kind of where it's at.
You know who wouldn't have let this shit go down? Some Dark Angels interrogator chaplains. Wouldn't have had to wait for any of this.
Yeah, but that's the issue. So the military intelligence is aware that Haldane's up to something and Haldane's a problem. But they can't initiate anything because he actually hasn't done anything yet. He's just acting in a way that's bad. So they needed someone to do something because it still is the Inquisition. So they go to Gaunt. And they reach out to Gaunt and they say, hey, basically, whatever's on Menzenoid, make sure it gets destroyed. Not it doesn't leave Menzenoid, it gets destroyed. And it turns out they were correct. I want to point out this book, by the way, was written in 1999. So the stuff we're going to reveal here, 1999. That predates, so this, we're in second edition 40K when they wrote this. Okay? So the fun side story, read the book if you want more about this, but the trip to Menzenoid Prime is a delight because basically the Jantine Patricians and the Tanith are on the same ship and start trying to kill each other. And it ends up with actually, and the ship captain at one point goes, I don't, just lock the door, let them beat the crap out of each other. I don't care. Just leave my ship alone.
We're still to where we need to go.
Yeah. Although there is one bit I do need to talk about because this did drive me nuts when I read it. So at some point, this is 1999, there's an assassin sent after Gaunt, and it's a Psi assassin because it's a regular person who someone then uses a psychic influence to take over, because that way they don't know that they're an assassin.
Yes, they Manchurian candidated him.
No, it's not Manchurian candidate. It's the Naked Gun, Brad. This is literally the Naked Gun. All right. This is how they tried to kill the queen in the Naked Gun. But luckily, Enrique Palazzo was there and was able to save the queen from, is it Reggie Jackson? Is that who was trying to kill the queen?
Reggie Jackson.
It was Reggie Jackson, because Reggie Jackson was totally going to kill the queen with the pistol, the thing on the third base. I've seen this movie a lot of times, by the way. Yeah. This was the plot to the Naked Gun. There we go. Had to get that off my chest real quick. And yeah, again, Enrique Palazzo. All right. Anyway, Gaunt realizes that whatever is going on in Menzenoid Prime is pretty significant and it's very complicated. So he needs to go and make some allies and get prepared. So he does. He brings all the Tanith together and effectively says, when we get down there, the shit's going to get real. They arrive on the planet and effectively, it is the most, hey, don't go here, that of all, hey, don't go here's. There is one giant chaos structure that is a seat of power and surrounded by tall, they can't tell if they're stone or metal pillars all over the place. And Dravir looks at this and goes, cool, deploy forces, go forward. And I am actually going to even lead it with my super Leviathan battle tank thing. And they do that. And as soon as they start going forward, all of the towers activate and form a super force field, disintegrating anything that's in between them and trapping anything that's on the inside of them, including Dravir, who dies.
I mean, we didn't really pull the fact out. Before this happens, Gaunt had found out about his plot.
Yeah. So Gaunt knew all about what was really going on.
Yeah. I mean,
Gaunt had deployed first.
Yeah, because Gaunt and the guys find out that Dravir is full on going to try to supplement Makarith. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's going to try and kill Makarith, and he's going to do it with whatever is on this planet. So yep. Gaunt knows he has to find it first. What's fun is Gaunt also, when they got down there, the Tanith looked up at these pillars and went, these are a no.
Yeah.
And put let's just not have these around, and put explosives on them. So when their towers went to activate, they blew them up. So the Tanith were actually safe when they activated. Because the other problem is, once the towers activated, all the chaos forces that were hiding there stopped hiding, because everyone was basically trapped inside these little pens of force field and couldn't go anywhere. And we're getting just mortared to the end of the earth and shot at. So the Tanith start moving forward, because they go, we have to go find what's at the core of this thing and see what we can do. The other problem, though, is that while Dravir was planning on using Menzenoid to usurp Makarath,
also the Patricians were planning on attacking the Tanith from the back, using all of this to kill. They're going to blame it on the Chaos Forces. But the Dragoons, the Vitrine Dragoons, who had been super tight because of the whole, hey, thanks for saving our life thing, were pretty pumped. And they had been watching these guys and radioed in a message to Gaunt, his boys.
Yeah, so the story's really fun. So what happens is, this whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket. Dravir is killed. He's dead. There are chaos forces attacking everywhere. Gaunt and the Tanith are trying to fight their way to whatever this thing is that's at the core of it. While they're going, they get a radio message. It was a code word, which I'm forgetting right now. And the code word basically warned them, they're
pineapple.
The patricians are coming for you. It was definitely not the safe word from Eurotrip. And the patricians are coming for you. What this does is, this way Gaunt knows they're coming, and Gaunt then sends a second signal out, which lets the dragoons know. Oh, this is what's happening. So as the patricians basically assume that they're going to catch the Tanith from behind and just slaughter them, instead they catch a Tanith who are actually fortified and were ready for them, and begin mortaring them and shooting back at them. So the patricians get upset, and they end up doing a bayonet charge into the Tanith lines up a hill, losing a ton of soldiers in this process. By the way,
it goes even
again.
Worse.
Oh yeah, I was while Chaos is fighting. Yeah, by the way, so point out, Chaos is watching all this happen, going like, "I just shoot both of them. I don't
care." Yeah, I don't know.
And like, this is right like, now. Yeah, but this is fine with us.
The show up and just wreck face the patricians.
The patricians basically reach the Tanith line, because the patricians are wearing armor. They are wearing, it's not space marine armor, but they are much more armored. And just in time, as they reach the Tanith line, the dragoons basically pop out behind them going, so what you guys up to? And kill every single patrician. So all the patricians are dead. Now, this frees up Gaunt to keep moving forward in the Menzenoid Epsilon Prime. And he discovers what it is. And what it is an STC. Well, and STCs, by the way, are not
good STC, by the way. Yeah.
But we also need to set the table correctly. STCs are not a USB drive. STCs are full manufactorums. And this is a giant one. And it's an ancient one. It is a 20,000-year-old one, because it makes Men of Iron. That's what this is. This is why Haldane and Dravir wanted it. This is the ultimate weapon in the galaxy. With this, this is a weapon that did wipe out humanity, or almost wipe out humanity. But the idea they had was, if we can turn this thing around, it could wipe out all the enemies of humanity.
Yeah, except for the fact that it's wildly corrupted by chaos right now.
It has been sitting, it has basically been sitting inside of a chaos shrine for 1,000 years. And it's also been sitting for 20,000 years, untouched. And I don't feel like doing all the M. Night Shyamalan plot twists that occur here, but if you've read the book, you know what I'm talking about, because we don't actually know who the secret agent is, but there's a secret agent, blah, 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 blah.
Let's also throw on, Ron becomes a lot more cool with Gaunt, because before this, he gets basically abducted, I guess, by Haldane. And wildly tortured, and Gaunt and his boys broke him out from that before this happened.
Yes. But what ends up happening is Haldane is still alive because he actually did get shot in the face by Larkin earlier. And Haldane tries to kill Gaunt via a puppet that he'd planted next to Gaunt. But that puppet gets shot in the face. And then that feedback gets into Haldane, which actually kills Haldane. But more importantly is the STC. Gaunt looks at this thing and just goes, nope. Like this is a giant pile of nope. All of this is nope. It is heavily corrupted. I can see it from here. So he blows it up. And when he blows it up, because truth is, look, best case scenario, the AdMech get a hold of this thing and they destroy the galaxy with it. Worst case scenario, Chaos gets a hold of it and actually just conquer the galaxy with it. Yeah. So he blows it up.
I love both. I don't want to skip the one. It's a little bit of, again, a book spoiler on it, but Ron got saved by Gaunt, and then Ron shot the assassin, is the one that shoots the assassin in the face. And so basically they get the whole, we're bonded for life forever now. We know we're both each other. Yeah. At the time, he does. Thank you very much.
Yeah. The problem is Ron also will try to kill him again later.
Well, I'm saying, but as of right this second.
Yeah. Right now he's cool with him. And then we'll later be like,
I'm just saying Gaunt saved his life. Ron effectively saved Gaunt's life right now. You know what I mean?
So. That's true. They're kind of cool at this point, but just kind of. But yeah, with the destruction of the STC, it turns out all those pillars were attached to it as well. All the pillars then turn off and they actually start collapsing down. So all the Chaos forces in them, that's awkward. And now the forces of the Imperium are able to reconvene. They turn the tide of the battle and the Imperium are able to conquer this nothing pointless world. That's the end of it. So that's the end of this story for now. We'll break here. Next week, we're going to do more Inquisition and more Imperial Guard backstabbing because the Sabbat Crusade, as it continues, starts to get a lot worse. They have to push into the core worlds, and Gaunt is going to start to become a lot more powerful because he and Makaroth are going to start to get to know each other pretty well. Yeah, and the Tanith are start pulling off a bit more and more of the impossible. There is a little bit of jumping the shark. I'm going to warn you guys now. I probably will complain a little bit next week about some of the battles that the Gaunt's ghost pull off. But that's me. But he is going to be a living saint, so I guess it's okay he does it. Anyway, until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys then.